Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. Today is Thursday, April 22nd, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website whyagain.org. If you go there and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for over 16 years to effectively improve the quality of my life in a variety of ways and turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us are gifted with. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. You can download a host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that process, or they've given testimonials about how the active use of that process is improving their life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often so that we can entertain your comments and questions at 563-999-3581. So if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. And this is also a year that we've agreed to do the Course in Miracles worksheet workbook lessons, and so today is the 112th day of the year. And so as we go into another review lesson, before we do, I thought I would take another little piece out of the preview to the review and remind us that we shouldn't put too much energy into trying to make sure that we can do this lesson every hour and every half an hour. And yet at the same time, we should be awake to the fact that we might be choosing not to do the exercise. Do not deceive yourself in this. Unwillingness can be most carefully concealed behind a cloak of situations you cannot control. Learn to distinguish situations that are poorly suited to your practicing and distinguish those from those that you establish to hold up camouflage to hide your unwillingness. So those practice periods that have been lost to you because you did not want to do them for whatever reason, you should go back and do those as soon as you have changed your mind about your goal. You are unwilling to cooperate in practicing salvation only if it interferes with goals you hold more dear. And, of course, the Course in Miracles would want us to make sure that we are holding most dearly to the goal of seeing life accurately, seeing ourselves as the light, seeing ourselves as a gift, seeing life as a gift. It goes on to say, when you withdraw the value you have given these goals that conflict with seeing yourself as the light, then allow your practice periods to be replacement for your litanies against them. These distractions gave you nothing. These goals to be anything other than love and light give you nothing. And practicing these lessons can give you everything. So accept their offering and be at peace. So today's review lessons are of lesson 93, which is simply, light and joy and peace abide in me. The commentary reads, I am the home of light and joy and peace. I welcome them into the home that I share with my Creator because I am part of creation. The second review lesson is lesson 94. I am as the Creator created me. Commentary is, I will remain forever as I was created by the changeless like itself. And I am one with all of creation, and all of creation is one with me. Then on the hour, recite, light and joy and peace abide in me. And on the half hour, recite, I am as the Creator created me. And the book by Pam Grout, titled The Course in Miracles Experiment, talks about lesson 112, as she titles it, The Dude Abides. And she quotes Naval Rivikant as saying, memory and identity are burdens from the past that prevent us from living freely in the present. Memory and identity are burdens from the past that prevent us from living freely in the present. Pam writes, for morning and evening review, what you need to know is light and joy and peace abide in me. And you also need to know I am as the dude created me. She writes, the aim of A Course in Miracles is to disengage from the consensus reality, to practice operating from a full spectrum of frequencies. We're born with the whole enchilada, but well-meaning grown-ups encourage us to wave goodbye to our imaginary friends, to detach from our mystical connection. With practice and daily attention, we can reconnect with the full spectrum and start to notice that miracles are everyday affairs. They are as common as the morning sunrise. So, that's our Course in Miracles lesson. That's the Pam Grout commentary. And we have a full 48 minutes left to entertain your comments, questions, answers, soliloquies, suggested topics, suggested books to read, suggested people to interview. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you press 1 when you call that number, it will let me know that you're interested in a little crosstalk, a little conversation. I had so many ways to go with talking for today's internet show that it kind of got derailed by my last session. I just finished a session, I ran a little bit late, and so I thought I would just give a review of that. This is the conversation in the session with this very bright, high-functioning woman went to a back-and-forth banter, argument, upset that was happening between her and her husband last night. And it prompted me to talk about one of the more powerful, effective tools that I've encountered is the idea of being able to discern the difference between emotional process when someone is triggered to upset and the content of a conversation. So I talk about it as whenever I'm triggered to upset, I want to turn inside and focus on my emotional process and just ignore the content. I want to put a pause in the discussion. I don't want to answer somebody when they say, well, why would you say that? And I don't want to start saying, well, I didn't mean that, and I didn't say anything like that. If I recognize that I'm triggered and the emotional process in me is above a 4 or 5, I want to call a timeout, refuse to answer the question about the content or the logistics, and breathe and soften and focus inside myself and discover by asking directly, how am I creating my emotional upset in this moment? How am I creating this emotion that I'm experiencing? Alternatively, I might ask myself, okay, what am I making this situation mean that's prompting me to generate such an intense negative emotional response? Likewise, if I'm in a conversation with somebody and I notice their emotional intensity spikes or peaks, I want to be willing to support them in looking at and dismantling that emotional upset. And I want to refuse to be drawn into the wild goose chase of tracking down any comments about the logistics or the content or the who said what or who did what, until the emotional intensity has been diffused. So, you know, this is a situation where two people that love each other very much are trying to communicate and one gets triggered to upset. As we understand in this work, that's almost always from my childhood issues, my insecurity, my previous patterns in abusive relationships, whatever. But when I get triggered to an upset and I have anger or irritability come up, it's covering for me fear, pain, or sadness. It's either blocking me from feeling the full extent of my fear, pain, or sadness, or I'm going to use that irritability or anger as a drug to numb me out to my fear, pain, or sadness, or I'm going to use it as an attack against what my mind is showing me as some outside source that is causing. Now, my mind is trying to show me this lie that someone outside of me is causing my fear, my pain, or my sadness. And when I'm able to recognize and train myself to have a kind of an automatic response pattern, anytime I recognize that I'm triggered to an intense negative emotional state, then I want to kick in the auto response, which is calming, centering, focusing inside. I want to be able to refuse to take the bait. I want to refuse to discuss the logistics, the who said what, the who's right or who's wrong, and I want to give myself permission to honor myself and whoever I'm dealing with by refusing to interact from the energy that is being driven by the pain or the fear or the sadness. So, for instance, the husband says, this is happening and that's happening, and it would be really helpful for me if you could clarify this. And the wife says, I can't believe you're more worried about that than you are worried about me. And the husband tries to say, you're the number one priority in my life. Why would I ever say anything to make you think that you're not my top priority? And he's now talking with anger, and she's talking with anger because she's hurt. My counsel, the tool that works most powerfully for me, is that as soon as I recognize I've gone to anger or fear or sadness, I call the timeout. Sometimes quite literally, I'll say the phrase, timeout. Sometimes I just say, I need a minute here. Sometimes I'll just start breathing and tapping using the EFT tapping points or rubbing my fingers and turning the focus inside and alerting myself consciously to the awareness that I'm feeling upset. And if I have upset in me, the presence of that emotional process, I want to make that my top priority. I want to refuse to talk about the content. Well, I didn't say that. I said this. I didn't mean that. I meant this. All of that discussion is going to be spun. It's going to be a wild goose chase. It's going to tip over into who's right and who's wrong, and I don't want to engage in that. I don't want to engage in it when I'm triggered to an intense emotion, and I don't want to engage in it when I sense that whoever I'm talking with is triggered to an intense emotion. I just had a flash on one of the more prominent, I'm sure I talked about this on the internet show when it happened, but this was a couple of years ago, and the situation was that this was a Thursday afternoon, and on that next day, Friday morning, I had taken the day off of work, scheduled patients so I wouldn't have any patients that day, so I could be available to take my sister for a knee replacement surgery. And so there was a lot going on in my life. High stress levels because I had scheduled a couple extra patients on Thursday. I knew I was going to be off on Friday. I had some things I had to get done for my sister. All this stuff was happening. And then I got this message from my practice manager either mid-morning or early afternoon that there's a problem. Someone is wanting to sue me. And my practice manager is in tears, and she can't handle it. And she wants to know if I will take this over for her. So I take a deep breath or two. I tell her, absolutely, don't worry about it. I'll handle it. And I put in a call to this person who starts yelling at me on the phone. So if I take the position that I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and I haven't done anything wrong and I crossed all my T's and dotted all my I's and you've got no right yelling at me, there's going to be one level of interaction here. But if I recognize that as soon as I'm hearing someone yell at me and I'm sitting in my own office and I feel a sense of indignation arise in me, what I need to do is take a breath, turn the focus inside and calm myself down, refusing to talk to this person from my anger. And I did that. And I sat here and I did EFT tapping. And he has no idea that I'm tapping. I'm not on a video call. I'm calming myself down while he's raging at me about how, you know, $4,000 to $8,000 he's going to sue me for this, and it's all my fault, et cetera. So I took a breath and I asked him to just calm down for a minute and let me know, you know, get a write-up of this. I let him know, I just got introduced to this, and that's ridiculous. I've been trying to contact your office for weeks, and this deadline is tomorrow at noon, and you got it. So I said, just, you know, give me a minute here. Just put this together. If you've sent a whole bunch of emails, please just send them to me, and I'll review them, and I'll get back to you. And I got off the phone. I did a couple more rounds of tapping, got myself calm and centered. Later that night, after all the patients were done, I started reviewing the emails. And I did some more tapping and breathing and a couple worksheets before I went to bed. The next morning, I got up bright and early, and I'm still processing what's going on. I get my sister to the hospital. We go through all of the pre-surgery prep. They put me in a private room. Her and I in a private room awaiting surgery, and they come and they take her out, and as soon as they leave, the first thought I have is, I want to go get something to eat. And then I thought, oh yes, you're avoiding dealing with this mess. So I took a breath or two, got my phone out, and looked at the email that I had crafted and detoxified a couple times, and I thought, this is going to be better if I use this as a template and call this person and try to stick to what's on the email and say this to them. So I calm myself down a little bit more, and I get my courage up, and I call this guy who the day before was, you know, threatening to sue me for this and that. And keep in mind, at this point, I'm pretty certain we didn't do anything wrong, that my practice manager didn't do anything wrong, that I didn't do anything wrong, and that maybe even the guy who's angry at me on the phone didn't do anything wrong. So I call him, even though it's the last thing I want to do, but I knew it was okay because I had calmed myself down enough and I was making an actual choice, and I had prepared what I wanted to say, and I get him on the phone. And as soon as he hears it's me, he starts ramping up again. So I just listened, and I sat there, and I did my canceling my goals and breathing and rubbing my fingertips, allowing this energy to run through me. And when he diffused a little bit, I said, so let me replay this to you. And I replayed the scenario, and I said, so I can tell by the energy you have for talking about this, how upset you are, that this is very important to you, and you're thinking you didn't do anything wrong, and you're being threatened by this other attorney. Yes, that's right. I didn't do anything. And he went in his whole thing about how he didn't do anything wrong. And I said, all right, I get that. I've had some similar feelings come up for me since our call yesterday when you seemed to be so upset and you were blaming me. And I don't think I did anything wrong. What you did, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I'm not saying who did anything right or wrong. I'm just talking about how you're feeling upset because you believe you did nothing wrong and you're being threatened. And I can identify with that because I'm sitting here thinking, we didn't do anything wrong and yet you're threatening me. And he went through another episode of upset. And I said, so let me just review. We got two people on the phone, and both of them feel that they're being unjustly accused and threatened. And there's a third party that's initiating all of this that's not on the phone. And he had another level of upset about that third party attorney. And I said, so here's my thought. I cut him off because he wasn't quite as ramped up. And I said, here's my thought. My solution would be that since you and I are both being threatened, and you and I are both very convinced that we haven't done anything wrong in the first place, and neither of us really want to get involved in attorney's fees and courts, and how about we have this solution where you and I team together to present an offer to these people, and you and I share the cost and make this go away without having legal ramifications. And there was silence on the other end of the phone. And then he said, almost, I don't know if he was crying or not, he sounded kind of choked up. He said, "You would do that?" with this incredulous tone. And I said, "Well, it seems to me that that would limit the risk, and it would certainly satisfy this other party, because then they wouldn't have any reason to go further in court. And it's this contained exposure." And he said, "Well, yeah, I would do that." I said, "All right, let's do that then." He said, "Well, how am I going to know?" And I said, "Well, because I'll verify it this way. I'll get it done by, you know, noon, et cetera." So just imagine how differently it would have gone if I had interpreted his yelling at me and threatening me with a lawsuit and telling me how incompetent I was the day before, if I had interpreted that as an actual attack on me, as something that I needed to defend against, or something that I had to take at face value, instead of getting into the content, I recognized I was getting triggered to upset. I could clearly hear this other person's triggering to upset. So I put the whole thing on hold until I could process my upset and calm myself down. And I spent time that night. I spent time before going to bed. I spent time in the morning doing EFT tapping, breath work, and worksheets. I spent some time trying to compose an email. When I reread it, I saw that there was still a heavy emotional charge in it, so I modified it again, and then I put it aside. And then I got busy with my sister's needs and trying to care for her and the whole surgery thing, which was far more important than any of this. And then I did some calming and breathing and then engaged the conversation with a refusal to talk about the content until the emotional processing had been diffused to the point where it was reasonable to assume both of us can evaluate the situation logically. Because I tell people, you know, if you're like, I'm going to tell you something. People come in for a first session, and often I'll get into this pattern with them. I'll say, "Let me try and tell you something that I've observed about a lot of people, and I would like to have you observe to see if it's true for you." So the first thing is, if you're like most of us human beings, you've got a logical side of your mind and you've got an emotional side of your mind. The second thing I want to tell you is, if you're like most of us human beings, you will observe that you make the best decisions when you've got good access to both the logical side of your mind and the emotional side of your mind. There's valuable data input from both of these. And then I say, if you're like most of us human beings, and I use my hands, you know, left side up, right side up, balancing motion. I said, if you're like most of us, when your emotional intensity, I use my right hand for that, and I say, down here at my knee it's 0, and up here about as high as I can reach with my right hand is 10 out of 10 upset, and I bring my hands back down and they're balanced again right next to each other, palms up in front of me. And I say, when my emotional intensity gets to be about a 6.5 or a 7 on that scale of 0 to 10, I tuck my left hand behind my back and I say, my logic is in the back of the bus. It's offline. It's in the back of the bus where it can't reach the wheel or the pedals, and my emotions run my life. And my logic stays offline or unable to drive my behavior until after I've calmed down in this emotional intensity to about a 3 or a 4 on a scale of 0 to 10. And then, and only then, does my logic come back online where it can have good, clear input, and I can have that balance between my logic and my emotions and make better decisions again. Now, I don't know it's true for you. I usually tell people in the session, I'm just suggesting that it might be useful for you to observe this for yourself. And if that's the case, then I ask the question, if you observe that that works that same way for you, then what would be the most useful skill you could develop? And most people say, calming down when I'm triggered. And I say, well, no, that's a good guess, but it's really not possible, because we just defined this as when I get triggered, the part of my mind that is logical and rational that I could use to calm myself down is offline. So it doesn't make sense to say the skill I need is to calm down once I'm triggered. What makes sense is the skill I need is to develop my ability to monitor my upset levels more consistently throughout the day. And as soon as I notice that my upset level is moving from a 2 to a 3 to a 4, I take steps to diffuse the upset or the emotional intensity before it has a chance to get to the level where it's triggered, where I'm triggered, and my logic is offline. So we teach skills. We teach breathing and tapping and focusing on your internal state and taking 100% responsibility for your internal emotional state simply because it's one of the most practically effective steps in self-regulation, in self-autonomy, in being able to be the kind of person that you say you want to be in your calm, centered moments when life is going well. And the more often I can catch that early warning sign, the earliest possible warning signs that I'm going from calm and focus and compassion to any kind of upset, then the more different ways and places I will have opportunities to make a change for the better. And of course, I say this in pretty much every intro, I have great gratitude for the fact that some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered for that purpose are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. They include the Reality Management Worksheet. They include the Three Early Memories of Conflict. They include the Targeted Journaling that Michael calls the Mind Shifter Tool. It includes the Codependence to Interdependence Worksheet, which is a list of everybody that I think has offended me. The next column says what I think they did that offended me. The next column is my punishment thought for them. And the next column is my advice to them. And what they need to do is they need to always be honest, and they need to mind their own business, and they need to, and they need to, and they need to. And then the last column in that worksheet says, here's how I'm going to apply my advice to them in my life. And one of the hidden gems in the Michael Rice lectures, and he's got a whole, I don't know, 15 or 16 or 18 different DVDs, and one of the hidden gems in there is this following observation, that every time I tell somebody what they should do, it may be good advice for them, and it's perfect advice for me. And I haven't said this in a while on the show, but I said it frequently in the early days of this internet show. Sometimes people are shocked to hear me say that even as a clinical psychologist, when I'm in a session with a patient, when I hear myself say something to somebody, and it comes out as, you need to, you better, here's what you have to do. Any form of direct telling somebody what to do, I'm giving somebody advice, even in the middle of a therapy session. There's a part, on my good days, there's a part of my mind that's listening to that and saying, okay, Tim, where do you need to do that? And one of them is, came to mind is a number of years ago, it had to be based on the office I remember being in, had to be about 9 or 10 years ago. I remembered saying to somebody, you really need to carve out more time for the primary, you know, the top priority relationships in your life and spend quality time with them. And as soon as I heard myself say it in that way, you really need to, my mind said, okay, Tim, who in your life do you need to carve out more time for? Is this a relationship with your mother? Is this one of your sons? Is this your brother? And I made a mental note to pay attention, because when I told this patient, you really need to, what I've learned is that's my unconscious trying to give me the perfect advice for my situation, for my dynamics, conscious or unconscious. And yes, hopefully I'm doing a good job as a therapist. Hopefully I'm tuned into this other person. Hopefully that's good advice for them. At the same time, it's absolutely perfect advice for me. So area code 234, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Oh, area code this is Lisa. Sorry, it called from a different number. It's supposed to be calling from a different area code. I didn't recognize it. Okay, I just wanted to give
okay,
a little...
Okay, so hold on. I couldn't hear it. Who's on the line?
This is Lisa.
Oh, okay. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
I just wanted to give an experience, and it's about being triggered. And even though I still get triggered, my reaction or my conscious triggering after that. So I come in the house and Bob has done half of a load of laundry. Don't ask me why he only did half a load. I don't know, but that violated some goal of mine. And I'm like, you did half a load of laundry? Why would you do a half a load of laundry? But in the same tone, I said, I must be holding a goal for you. You must have violated a goal that I was holding. And then I simultaneously stomped into the bedroom, shut the door, and proceeded to do all the work that I did to dismantle what was going on. But it was so hilarious because even though I had a reaction, I had a triggering, I could still hear everyone, you and Michael and Jeannie and everybody saying, you must have a goal that's firing. And anyway, I thought it was really funny.
That's good. That means that this training that you've been doing for your brain is paying off.
Yes, and then in another situation, which was far more upsetting, my former husband text messaged me with a very, which most people would deem unkind, you know, however we want to go with it. And I had so much pain surfacing, but I kept saying to myself, if he's the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? If he's, and I'm driving and I'm trying to stay cognizant, I'm trying to stay there, I'm trying to stay, but the whole time, just repeatedly, I kept saying to myself, until I could get to a safer space, if he's the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? Just over and over and over again, and that was helpful. And then, I just wanted to say, this is totally different, but back to the beginning of the show, I was doing the Course in Miracles every single day and Pam Grout, and I went completely unconscious for 7 days and didn't have a memory that we were doing a Course in Miracles. So I'm not quite sure how to get back on target with that. I mean, I've started again yesterday, But I went completely unconscious.
What does it mean that you went unconscious and you forgot? So what did it practically mean? Did you just stop doing the lessons?
I had no memory that we were doing A Course in Miracles, even though it's on my phone. I don't have, I've got an ACIM app, but I just didn't do, I had no memory that I was supposed to be doing the lessons at any time during the day.
Okay. And so are you asking what to do now?
Well, I was just trying to, this was just brainstorming on how to get back on track. I just started again yesterday. But it was like a full, I estimated a full 7 days of not following through.
Okay, well, one of the things that comes to mind is if you really wanted to turn this into, as we try to do with everything in life, turn it into a learning experience,
mm-hmm.
there are a number of ways you could go about that. One of them is you could go back to the last day that you remembered doing the lesson
mm-hmm.
and figure out what that lesson was and whether or not there was something really triggering about doing that lesson or something that got stirred up in you as you did that lesson. Mm-hmm. And then you can explore that with worksheets. Or you might also go to the next lesson and look at, you know, is there something in the second or the first lesson that you didn't do that's something you were avoiding consciously or unconsciously?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is you can look at, so what was going on in your life in the week before you dropped the ball on doing your commitment to do the lessons, and do
mm-hmm.
some worksheets around what those stressors were.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Those are all good strategies.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
for my money, that would be more important than trying to decide how do I get caught up.
Yeah, that's wiser. Well, I'm glad I reached out because I would have probably done it a different way. But no, that makes a lot more sense. And thank you.
Well, you're entirely welcome and deserving. I appreciate the call. Anything else we can do to support you?
No, I just wanted everybody to laugh with me about me.
I must have a goal for you that's not getting met. Yep, pretty good bet.
and then I proceeded to semi-stomp out of the room, you know, but at least it didn't do any harm to the relationship.
Well, it's wonderful because it's basically what we want, what each of us wants to do. You know, it's the idea of when people practice in the martial arts. Did you remember the ever see the movie Karate Kid? And the little student wants to learn, you know, karate, and so the man says, okay, come, you know, wax my car and paint my fence and do it just this way, wax on, wax off, wax on. And then the kid gets fed up, and I didn't sign up to do work around your house. I signed up to learn, you know, martial arts. And the master says, okay, but look what you've trained your body to do that it now does automatically. When I try to hit you, look at how your body, these muscles, have been trained. That's what we're doing. We're training our mental, emotional awareness muscles to tune in to any upset and turn the focus inside automatically, whereas our culture and our family has endlessly trained us to turn it outside and scan the outside environment for the danger, for the pain inducer, et cetera. It's a training of my mind. It's a training of observation that, you know, your example helps indicate that your training is paying off because you, even though you were still upset, you went right to the automatic phrase, I must have a goal for you that's not getting met. That's exactly when I would do all of these jobs in the juvenile hall and the probation office and the psychiatric hospital, they would train us over and over again. Now, when somebody comes at you in anger or fear, when somebody comes at you trying to punch you, or we have to restrain these people, this is what we're going to do. Let's practice it again. What if he goes this way? This is what we're going to do. Until the response becomes automatic and very different than what any of us had been trained to prior to getting into those jobs. Trained to respond to somebody who comes at us with their fist cocked trying to punch us with calm. We're not trained
right.
with that. So
right.
as we practice and practice and practice, hopefully eventually we have the auto response that is far more beneficial. That's
it
our
certainly
goal.
Feels, it certainly feels better in the body to even have a small trigger and then walk myself back than it does to, I remember the old days, you know, of being completely having what felt like every part of my body involved in my upset, and that's no fun at all.
Absolutely.
So, well, that's all I had.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Blessings.
Well, thanks.
We have area code 760. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Hey, this is Ann in Florida. Hey, Lisa, good to hear your voice, and thank you. I was laughing with you, but that's such a great example that as I, you know, get better at using these tools that, because I could hear myself, I mean, I can hear myself in the future saying that, like in relationship with my daughter, because she knows, you know, of the work. But rather than explain it, just do it, you know, and be that example. So that's awesome. I love it. So my question, Dr. Tim, is the stuff that you were talking about and the example that you just gave earlier of your processing. So when I'm the one that triggers my own self, I could use that same process, right?
Absolutely. It's all an inside job anyway. I'm the only one who's ever triggering me. This gentleman who called didn't trigger me. The interpretation I chose about his voice and his words is what is connected energetically to the upset I was feeling. There's nothing about him that was causing upset in me. Nothing about his behaviors or words. Only, always and forever, what I choose as an interpretation of those behaviors and words and tone, that's the only thing that resonates, creates the upset in me that I experience.
So it's the same thing. If I'm looking inside of me, if I'm looking at someone else do something and I'm interpreting it, then I'm setting up my own upset because of my perception of what's going on, and so I still need to deal with it on my own
exactly.
level and go inside.
Exactly. It's always
so,
the inside
job. So that's
job.
Why Michael says an event or situation, you know, as well as a person, can trigger anything. Actually.
Yep. It's not triggering it. It's the interpretation I'm choosing or that automatically
right.
comes up in me. That's what's the creating the resonance with the trauma energy that's in me or the negative emotional energy that's in me.
So that helps, just looking at these piles of papers and clutter. I can look at that differently. I just need to do some work on it more.
Right, and ask yourself, if you look at that and you have anger come up in you, you can look at it, the paper and say, okay, how am I creating this anger? Or you can look at it and say, okay, what am I making it mean that there's a pile of paper here that isn't mine, that I don't want to be here? What am I making it mean? Am I making it mean my daughter's disrespecting me? Am I making it mean she thinks I'm not valuable? Am I making it mean nobody cares about me? And there I can start my internal work based on what the meaning I'm creating based on the outside stimulation.
Okay, so if I've created it, I still am going to look at, yeah, okay. If I've made the piles and I've, you know,
exactly.
Okay. That's all right. That's really helpful because it's been.
Piles aren't the thing. It's what I'm making it mean that's the thing.
These tools I have, but not applying them to something in a sense that's simple, kind of like, you know, Lisa with the laundry. I mean, these piles, it's just paper. And I'm making it mean, and I, you know, and I'm, it's bringing up anger in me. It's like, okay, so it's all about me. Okay. So I need a timeout from the, I love it. Anyway, I love community. Thank you so much. And your whole example is just phenomenal. And so thanks so much for the transparency and sharing.
Oh, you're very welcome and deserving. Thank you for the call. Anything else we can do for you?
No, that's great. That's awesome. Thank you. Blessings.
Thanks, Ann. So we have 6 minutes left. You know, the other thing that comes to me to say, if nobody else puts a hand up, is that Michael was talking earlier this week in his show and his interactions with Jeannie about the need for a guru and the ancient Eastern traditions that have a guru. And, you know, there's a way to look at that and say that's not really a good thing because everybody needs to tune into their own internal wisdom, and we're here to help people tune into their own wisdom. And Michael was talking about how the role of the guru can be so valuable in a situation where the individual is triggered and is likely to run away from the work and blame the outside events person. And, you know, we have this pattern of looking at the outside and blaming it for our upset is so powerful in our culture and our families that, you know, at one level it is the primary obstacle that most of us are going to face in any good, true personal or spiritual work. This conditioning to look to the outside whenever there's an upset on the inside. And if you read a book like Buddha's Brain, where it tries to talk about the research they have on evolution and genetics and formulation of the brain and different parts of the brain and its function, it makes really good sense that we overpredict for the negative, because when we're living out in the wild, those of us who get very good at diving into the bushes every time there's a noise we don't recognize, we survive longer. We don't get eaten by the tiger or trampled by the elephant. Essentially, that there's a way to look at that evolutionary mechanism that says we evolved into neurotic messes because the people that dive into the bushes every time there's the rustling of a leaf or a rabbit, the sound that a rabbit or a deer makes and dives into the bushes, what if it's something horrible that I could eat me? They survive. And, of course, they dive into the bushes a lot to run away from something that can't hurt them at all, and they're afraid of everything, but they survive. Whereas those people that are brave, more brave and more curious and more willing to put up with risk, they get eaten more often because they don't dive into the bushes when they hear a rustling and it was a Bengal tiger or it was an elephant that stomped on them or whatever. So we can think about the way our brains function in a way that makes really good sense as from an evolutionary perspective. And one of the problems we have, one of the things that brings us so much pain and suffering in our lives, is that that system that worked so well to keep us alive physically when we were part of the food chain, we were not sitting at the top of it yet. We were, you know, we were prey as much as predator. That system in the mind got translated, not translated, just 100% adopted with no adaptation from the physical threat to the mental-emotional world. But it doesn't really function very well that way because, you know, if I have anger come up in me, it's not a life and death situation. If I have frustration, it's not a life and death situation. And so the anger, the rage, the fight or flight mechanism isn't really applicable. And yet I keep creating that response pattern, which does all kinds of damage and stress hormones and wear and tear on the body because the body was never designed to be in constant fight or flight mode. And yet I can over-predict for the negative. I can look to the outside for the source of my pain with tremendous regularity because that's what's been conditioned into me. So we're in the process of trying to train ourselves to respond very differently to the everyday ebb and flow of thoughts and the dynamic of my thoughts and the intense mind energy I pour into my thoughts being the mechanism that creates my emotions. And we aren't taught that. We aren't trained into it. We're trained into the opposite. So, in a very real sense, mentally, emotionally, spiritually speaking, we need to go into kung fu training. We need to do wax on and wax off endlessly until we develop a new habit of response that puts us in the pattern of looking to the source area, to the area in which the source of our negative emotions and pain and fear and sadness are being created. And that's the only way we're going to be able to liberate ourselves from that unproductive, abusive cycle that we create every time our mind tries to blame someone or something outside of us for something it doesn't like experiencing. So, we have run out of time. We don't have anybody here yet to step in, but that's the end of our first hour. There should be another hour coming up if Michael and or Jeannie chime in soon. I should remind everyone that this is a Thursday, and so there will be an online MindShifter support group tonight. You can find out about joining that absolutely free through Zoom if you go to MindShiftersAcademy.org website, and there's a separate page for Tuesday's login information and a separate page for Thursday. Feel free to join us or forward that information to somebody you know who might find it of interest. Again, that's on MindShiftersAcademy.org website, Thursday support group. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love and creation, and everything else is false. And I am going to hang up and call back in so that Michael can get a chance to call in.
Well, welcome everybody to Mind Shifters Radio. This is Michael Rice. We are honored and delighted that you're here with us. Michelle should be joining us any moment. Today is Thursday, April the 22nd. And I am just honored and delighted that we get to play in this arena. Hey, well, hey there, young lady. I'll turn it over to you.
I'm talking into a muted phone. My apologies. I'm like, Michael, I'm here.
Oh, technology. Well, I've been mute challenged more times than I care to think about, so I understand.
Like what?
So
you know,
it was a different.
Yeah, it was a different kind of mute. I was mute. My phone wasn't muted. I was muted on the switchboard.
Ah.
So, anyways, I haven't done the switchboard in a month or so. I forgot, apparently.
Oh well. You know, We are on track. Honored and delighted that you're here to support us. Jeannie had doctor's appointment with her dad today, and sounds like that's all going well, and he's doing well. And so, you know, we're just rocking along. We don't have Aria Rain today, so that's always a hole in our day when she's not around, because it's such a privilege to be with that little one. It is amazing. So welcome back after the absence of some time. Gee, we haven't heard much from you since you were in Arizona and, of course, Mexico before that. So maybe you want to share a little bit about your journey and your travels and what's been happening. Your daughter doing okay, I hope? Are you back home?
Yeah. No. Yeah, everything's good. We're working hard. Lots of, you know, referrals. Industry is booming, so to speak. I'm sure makes sense to people.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, not too much to, not really to report on. And
okay, cool. How was your trip to Mexico? Did it all go well?
Yeah, no, it really did. I made a lot of nice new friends here.
Sweet, awesome. Very cool. Well, we have been reading from the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So I'm going to open to page 58 if you're following us in the book. And again, if you don't have a copy of the book, we spread several tens of thousands of them around the early part of the century. And so usually you can buy one. I understand the price is going up recently. It was at one point you could buy them for $2. Which is a little brought up a little embarrassment for me, but now they're up around $7 or $8 for used copies. And gee, I saw one a little while back, and somebody wanted $8,000 for it. It's like, my goodness, I'll get it reprinted and start selling it at that price. But anyway, I doubt they ever sold it. But they said they had an original signature in it, so hey, that's cool. Anyway, if you don't have a copy of it, as I say, you can usually order it on Amazon or eBay, and or you're welcome to go to our website and download a free copy of it there. So, and actually in several different languages. And we're on the topic of ancient wisdom. And we've been talking with Richard, the character in the book. It's recalcitrant, the kind of guy who shows up at Heartland, and you know, he's leaving his third marriage and, you know, these women behind. He knows that they're the problem in his life, and of course, it's all been them, all three of them. And so he just has to get rid of them, and then he knows he'll be happy. And so I start to quiz him a little bit on, well, you know, have you noticed that every time you've been there, you're the one who has these problems? Have you ever considered that maybe, just maybe, it's not all about them that you might be involved in your life? So Richard's been kind of coming around to that idea a little bit. And we've been talking about this, the fact that the Aramaic language conveys ideas and understandings that simply are not available through, well, any other language. And to even take a stab at saying many of the things that can be said in Aramaic in one word can take a whole paragraph. And so we've been sharing those ideas with him. And we've arrived at the point of looking at the breath and how the breath is a way to lock down pain, a way to not feel, a way to not deal with your life. And I asked Richard the question, has it occurred to you, just because someone could not live up to a teaching, we've been talking about the Aramaic being the root of five of the world's major religions, but it's not a religious language. And he has several issues with religion. And so, you know, he's been reading me the Riot Act about how the religious teachings are all just, you know, garbage, and he knows better. And all he has to do is escape from these women. So Richard, has it ever occurred to you that just because someone could not live up to a teaching does not mean it has no value or that the problem lies within the teaching? It sounds like one of those issues where one of your issues was your parents' inability to live up to their ideals. That does not make them good or bad. It simply means that, like all humans, they were not perfect. It seems you attached the imperfection and abuse of your parents to their religion. Projecting your pain onto religion makes it difficult for you to see any benefits in it. I've seen many who simultaneously abandon their relationship and their parents and their spiritual support systems in this fashion. I guess my parents do deserve the right to be human too. Perhaps I expected too much of them, he pondered. I can see that they were trying and did the best they could, and I feel relieved just knowing that. That might be a result of forgiveness. It's a small but significant example of how forgiveness works. Well, what do you mean by that, Michael? You had a reality file, so to speak, called my parent or parents should have been perfect. According to your perception, they weren't. And you attached the pain, abuse, and resentment you experienced with them to your mind's file on parents. Whenever that reality parent was triggered, your perception of them or yourself as a parent was clouded by the complex of thoughts and feelings in that file. And when you start really tapping into first century Aramaic forgiveness, when you start really understanding how the non-human mind works, and when I talk about the non-human mind, I mean the mind a mind that appears to be human but is not connected to love at any given moment, and that turns a human mind into a non-human mind. And so to take a look at that principle and realize that, you know, and Paul said this a couple thousand years ago, we see as though through a glass darkly. And when we're in the condition of denial, you know, thinking or speaking as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, you know, my parents really made me mad, I'm living in denial. If man's moving in me, man's moving in me because there's mad in moving in me, nothing to do with what mom or dad did. It just happens to be what's moving in me. Yes, they may be the one who resonates it. That may be with them that I acquired it. But here I am now, a full-blown adult. I'm still being run by the three-year-old mind. Rather than growing up into an actual adult and recognizing that if I have resentment, if I have hostility, if I have fear, if I language how you're the problem in my life, I dissociate with the cause of the problem in my life. And now I can no longer repair the problem in my life. And so what we're looking to do is to empower people to be able to repair their minds rather than seeing through a cloud darkly, to turn the mind into what it was originally designed to be, and that is a servant, something that supports us and brings us information when we need it and brings us awareness. Is a storage place for knowledge that when needed we can access, but not the place it's designed to run our lives. And most people have made a god of the mind, and as a result are living in denial, thinking and speaking as though something out there is the cause of what's moving in here, and they have to dissociate from the very root of the pain that they're holding, the very thing they need to deal with. When one lives in denial, they hide from themselves. They dissociate from it. And so what we're looking to do is to restore people to contact with everything within them, which means there's probably going to be a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth when that process begins. But the beauty of being able to touch into the parts of your mind that hold that wailing or gnashing of teeth is you get to start cleaning it out. You get to start cleaning it up. And you stop pretending that what's going on inside of you is caused by something that's happening outside of you. Change is absolutely everything. And so we're here to support change of absolutely everything and to provide the tools for cleaning out the darkness that Paul was talking about. so that the mind becomes just a clear piece of glass for us to look through and offers its support as the servant it was designed to be. And so in a nutshell, that's what our work together is about, and we are honored and delighted that you're here to be part of the process. And are there any hands up in the phone queue, or is anything happening in the chat room, Michelle, that we need to be aware of?
There was some hands up, but I think maybe those were from Tim. I wasn't on the show, so I'm not sure.
Right.
It looks like they were on hold for a while.
Well, you can maybe check in and see.
Sure. Hey, Lisa?
Yeah.
Hi.
I'm not
sure why your hand's up.
Oh, yeah. I just called in to tell a little tale about one of my temper tantrums. It was just an example of how the work is working with me.
Well, tell us about it. What happened?
Oh, well, it was. I did tell the tale, and it was Dr. Tim, but I'll tell you too. So, Marvin sent me a text, and it was, as I explained, it was. Most people would consider it very condescending. And it certainly just, I couldn't breathe. It just triggered me, and I was driving. And I was like, if he's the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? If he's the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? And I just kept saying that over and over, you know, till I got myself to a safer space. So that was my only. But, you know, it doesn't mean that things don't trigger, but my reaction is different than it used to be, for sure.
So you can see your progress?
Yes. And I knew it was all, I knew it was all me. Yeah, he might act unkindly, but that's his deal. You know, my deal is how I answer those things, which in this case I chose not to answer and just do my work around it, which even the thought of it triggers shortness of breath in me and all kinds of – obviously I still have much more work to do around my former husband. Go figure.
Yeah, well, that's that's pretty typical in our world today. But what goal – do you suppose he violated with that text? Have you looked at the goal that you had?
Well, yes, it was just the one that I had always been holding for him was kindness, just to be kind and logical. And
well, now they're two distinctly different goals. I'd suggest you do ones separately if you're going to do worksheets around them.
And I can tell you who those go back to, but that wouldn't be a surprise.
Right. Yeah. Power person dynamics, next layer.
And it was so silly, too, because when we lived together, we had bought a car and I had gotten a refund, like a $50 refund for a late fee that they charged that apparently wasn't, which didn't have to be charged to me. So they refunded me 10 years later or however long it's been. So somehow they found me in Ohio. You know, this is back when I lived in California. And so I endorsed the check and I sent it to him, you know, just said, you know, cash it. And then he sent me this venomous text back. And so and then he ripped up the check, so he wasted $50, which is a whole other deal. I mean, I don't need, $50 isn't a ton of money, but we could have donated it to somewhere. But anyway, that's a whole other story. Anyway.
Well, he just donated it to the bank.
Yeah, right. But,
well,
yeah,
it's nice to hear that you can think about the traumas and that you can be in laughter. I remember a time when that was not even conceivable, when you were having a conversation about the interactions in that relationship. So that's huge progress. Sounds like you're getting ready to tackle the next level of it.
Yeah, I still have a lot of hurt surfacing around, you know, still having no contact with my kids. And my mom is coming here next month, and she's going to my youngest son's graduation from high school, but I'm not. And it's you know, it's minute by minute, actually, dismantling the drama and trauma in my mind, and trying to remember to breathe.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, you might have to do it 30 times a minute in order to move through the intensity of what's coming up, especially if there are, you know, genetics involved in the dynamics, which quite often they are. So,
yeah.
So we'll hold the space.
Thanks.
How about a mind shifter?
I'm not going to write it down because I don't have anything. I'll just listen back, but go ahead.
Okay. So the mind shifter I'd suggest would be Marvin is so delightful because he acts, take a breath. Let's try that one again. Marvin is so delightful because he always acts rationally, sensibly, and is one of the kindest persons I know.
Oh, God. Okay.
Are you breathing?
Actually, you know, aside from the joke of not breathing, I could feel something in my upper belly tighten, and then in my lungs, just I wasn't physically holding my breath, but I felt my lungs contract and go tight.
Visceral. Yeah. So that'll be a good one to work with. And for anybody who's listening to the show that goes, wait a minute, what are you talking about? One of the tools we teach is called a mind shifter. And basically, the idea of a mind shifter is recognizing that the mind works by resonance. If you come up with a frequency, an energetic pattern, a system of words that will resonate the root of what I need to forgive, what needs to be released from my physiology, then that mind shifter will bring it up. So what we would suggest that be done with that mind shifter is take a piece of paper and put a line down the middle. And, you know, there might be many men and or women in the audience who've got a former that can still trigger them. So you might just put their name in the front of that mind shifter and use it yourself. You write it on the left-hand side of the page, and then you write everything that comes up in response to it on the right-hand side of the page. You kind of do a brain dump. And what that will do, you know, is, and, you know, I would suggest that perhaps, Lisa, you take a time period where you've got at least 4 hours, your phone is off, you're totally focused on writing, and spend 4 hours of that mind shifter and just let everything dump out on the page that needs to dump out on the page, and then start to go through whatever you've written and look at what's the tool that I know that I now have that I can dismantle this piece with, this one. And, you know, ultimately it's got nothing to do with Marvin. It's got to do with, as you notice, really nice awareness that you're able to locate exactly where in your structure the shutdown was happening, the dissociation was happening. And that's awesome. And so as you write, paying attention to that and letting all that open, you're going to let go of a monstrous load of stress that you don't need to be carrying around. Life will get easier.
Yes.
So,
it does.
Thanks for your willingness. I'm delighted to be here to support you.
Well, and just the last little bit of attaboys, you know, I had looked for a long time for help you know, and I had read all the self-help books that were out at the time that I could find. And, you know, everybody was like, oh, you know, and it just say this affirmation and it'll get better. And it never did. And my behavior just continued to spiral, you know, badly, for lack of a better word, until I knew that there had to be something, but I didn't have any examples in my life. And it's purely because of doing this work that, and then, you know, and the help of Julie and you and David and, you know, everybody hanging in there. I don't know how I would have, I don't know how, where I'd be if I didn't have it. I just don't know.
I understand.
So
I'm with you. I don't know where I'd be either. I wouldn't be in the place that I'm in if I didn't have the tools, that's for sure.
And the, you know, when I see the insanity, and I see the insanity in myself, I mean, it's really crazy.
Yep, it is.
I'm just grateful. That's all I have to say. Okay, on to the next person.
Glad to be on the team. Well, actually, I'm going to add another piece to the puzzle.
Okay.
And this piece isn't about you, but it may resonate some things because I know that David was also able to challenge some parts of your mind and brought stuff up for you in ways that were sometimes a little bit on the bizarre side. But I was just actually I'm going to be speaking this Sunday at Unity in Port Huron, Michigan, and doing a Zoom Facebook kind of thing. And I was going through some files, just looking at what title I was going to use and what I was going to do. And I came across the opening that I'm going to be using this Sunday. And it goes back to, let's see, it's got to be, nine or 10 years ago now that, early in the morning, I'm in bed asleep, and there's a knock on my bedroom door, and it's David, and he comes in tears, and he's just been informed that his son, who was a bright, healthy, you know, seemingly pretty highly functional kind of guy, had been at a party the night before, and somebody had brought drugs, and he used the drugs, and David had just gotten a call that they found his son dead that morning. And that just a month before, his next older son had died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
So two sons in a month. And so I was just, you know, sort of holding David in love and sending him support. I mean, there was actually a litany of things. He had a close friend who had just buried her son the week before because of a drug overdose. I mean, there were just this whole series of events that happened, and the you know, just had me contemplating the trauma in the world and the trauma that people carry, and the fact that, you know, we can remove this trauma and live from a different place. So I hadn't been thinking of David recently, so interesting that you bring up his name today.
Well, I was processing some stuff in regards to when I heard Magda call in about the responsibility of communication and with David and the responsibility of communication, the whole deal that, you know, the work that we had all done down in Heartland.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it triggered David and blah, blah, blah on down the line.
Have you listened to that video?
I have not.
From the responsibility communication. Well, if you go to Go ahead.
No. I should. Yes. Please tell me how to. I remember. I was going to, and then I didn't. But I'm eager to.
Yeah. Well, it was so powerful and so profound. We actually, Jeannie put it on the notes for the show last week. I forget which day it was, probably Tuesday or Wednesday. There's a link there, and we decided that we'd make it a free open link for 2 weeks, so it expires in another week or so. So if you just go to the notes, you can click on that link and give it a listen. But it was just so powerful. It just, like, to me, it's kind of like one of the crown jewels of the work is the willingness that Magda put forward to really step into that space and look at the principles of responsibility communication. And, you know, as she shared on the show yesterday, put her right into a healing crisis. And, you know, when we completed that 2 hours, she was very excited. New level of connectedness and vitality, and then of course every time that happens, the next layer of what needs to be unthreaded and undone comes to the surface. And so she's been, as she shared yesterday, kind of resistant to going back and listening to it, even though it was so powerful for her. And that's oftentimes one of the things that happens in reaching new levels of vitality, is that the healing process that it puts us into, there's a danger in that we hit this new vitality level. Oh man, look at this. I got it all handled. And then that new level of vitality loosens unresolved dissociated content from the mind. And when that content comes up, sometimes people get stuck in the processing of that new healing opportunity that's there and get lost in it. And so it's an important principle to recognize and to see that, you know, the insight I got out of it, or one of the main insights I got out of that whole process with her, was recognizing that each time I do get a new piece of my puzzle, I do another powerful piece of work, that's the time when I really need to make a commitment to make sure I'm going to go for it on the next level. Because if I don't, that stuff that's been loosed becomes the root of the perceptual constructs of my mind tomorrow. And I've watched people over the years get stuck in that, you know, for decades, because they weren't committed enough to take on the next level of what the process had exposed for them. So it's an important principle.
Yes, it is.
So all in all, we'd be rock and roll and hold the space for you. And maybe share with us what that mind shifter does for you when you come out the other side of it.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Lots of love and blessings. Nice
Thank
to say
you.
Hello.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. So I don't know of anybody else that might want to use that mind shifter, but there might be somebody in the crowd that still holds some old hostility and fear that needs to come up on the next level for healing, and we're here to support that occurring. And so, Ms. Michelle, it looks like we're at about the 30-minute mark, so we've got another 30 minutes for conversation. Is there anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, Michael, not right now.
Well, one of the things that I'm kind of sitting in contact with and appreciation of, you know, a couple of days ago, I had asked if Bob from Australia was in the chat room, and he was not. He has been joining us, geez, I'm not even sure now for how long, 3 or 4 years that he's there, even though it's 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning there when we do the show. Bob's, you know, quite often on there. And then, you know, the day or two later he was on and came on and shared a little bit with us. And just what's running for me right now is just the appreciation for people like you, Michelle, and Bob, like yourself, Lisa, who touch into this work, who do this work, who touch others with this work. It's just deep appreciation. And the fact that without people with that kind of willingness, like Monta had to do that piece of work, the work wouldn't advance nearly so quickly. And so accolades and appreciation to everyone who participates, whether I ever even know about it or not, doesn't really matter. Energetically, each person who does another piece of work opens a space for each person who has another piece of work to do to ease into that particular piece of work. And so much appreciation for every ear that listens, and especially for every person that passes it on to someone else and assists in our commitment. You know, what we're here to do is take it to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, at least making it available. And I'm also an appreciation for this technology that we have with Blog Talk Radio that, you know, I mean, literally at this point, anybody in the world that has access to the internet can have free access to these tools. It's like, how cool is that? And when we started doing this work, if we didn't travel to that city, it really wasn't very available. Well, there were videos and audios. Yes, they were, you know, people could order the DVDs and the CDs and what have you, but just the fact that this makes it so much more available, and now with being able to do our intensives on Zoom, it's really powerful to be interacting with so many people and taking the work forward. In fact, we're getting ready to complete where we've added an extra week, and we may add still another week to this intensive that we're doing right now, which is Codependence to Interdependence Communication Practicum. We've developed some new tools that we're bringing into the process. And so it's extending out the time, the need for teaching time a little more than we had expected. So there's going to be a couple of bonus weeks in there. But complete with this intensive on this topic of codependence to interdependence and responsibility communication. And my take is that the codependent principle is totally, completely, 100% literally what makes the world go round. And anyone who does not acquaint themselves with their own unconscious power person dynamics and clean those dynamics up is run by their power person dynamic. It literally runs the whole world. And I don't care if we're talking about religions or governments or businesses or, you know, family systems. Power person dynamic governs how at least 99.9% of people behave all of their lives. So because of this technology, we are going to be able to extend the availability of this codependence to interdependence intensive to more folks, making it easier to access. And by the time we complete this particular 14-week intensive, and we started out with a 14-week, and we created 54 hours of video. And then that 54 hours of video made a platform of self-study for the people in the second intensive. And then each Wednesday evening for the last 13 weeks, we've done a two-hour live session with the people in that intensive. As I say, we're going to be adding at least one extra week, perhaps two. So by the time we're complete, we're going to be up to 80-some hours on this topic of codependence to interdependence. And because of the fact that we've got this all now in the can, so to speak, recorded and available, the next offering that I'm going to make of that intensive will be that people can do a self-study of that whole package, 80-some hours of video, the paperwork, food support system. It was an awesome Facebook page that's been created on fresh and raw food with 14 weeks of menus and pictures. And Yurate has done just an awesome job of putting that together. So all of that's going to become available for a self-study package. and it'll cut the price of the intensive about in half. So if you're interested, you know, up within the next couple of weeks, you'll be able to buy that whole package and have permanent access to 80, I don't know what will actually end up with, 84, 86, 88 hours of video for self-study. And, of course, the radio show for support. And then the next time we do the codependence to interdependence intensive, everybody who was in our first one and our second one will be invited as guests. And those who purchase this package, this self-study package, will be able to simply pay the difference in the intensive cost and be upgraded to the participatory intensive. And the next intensive we'll do again in 14 weeks. It'll be 2 hours a week. So we'll add still another 28 hours of video that will become part of the permanent access to the intensive. So honored and delighted that each of you is with us and the work that each of you does, and that we're able to have access to this technology to be able to move it forward on the planet on a whole other level. And if you know of anyone who might have some issues in relationships, I know that's not a very common thing today, but you might let them know that there are tools available and that 5 days a week we're here to support anyone who has issues in any regard and support the understanding and the use of the tools of forgiveness. So thank you for being with us. I mean, we've got a lot of noise going on. Oh, oh. Michelle, maybe we can mute whatever microphones are open. We're getting a lot of racket there. I don't know if somebody's microphone's open, but it sounds like somebody clearing their desk or something. Anyway, if you're out there in listener land, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581, 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you have a question or a thought for us, need some support, if you push 1, that'll raise a hand in the control panel, and Michelle will introduce you. And we'll be having a conversation. So how can we support you? We've got about 20 minutes left, so we've got time for a couple of good conversations around issues and the use of the tools. So push 1. Let's have a conversation. How can we support you? And do we have anybody there, Michelle, with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No, not right now, Michael.
Well, then, let's have somebody put a hand up with the conversation that we've had so far. I can only imagine that most everybody that's listening has had a question, has had a thought that if we were, you know, immediately accessible, you know, if we were in your hometown and had done the show that we've been doing, had the conversation we've had and walked down off the stage and you were in the audience, would you walk over to me and say, Michael, what about, and if you've got that kind of question, now's the time to push 1 and ask your question. Five, six, 563-999-3581. It's hard to believe that with the conversations we've had so far, especially with that great mind shifter, that somebody isn't out there going, well, Michael, what about, what if, well, how does this or that work? So if you've got that kind of thought going, push 1. And, you know, oftentimes people are, you know, oh, my voice is shaky. I'd be on the public, on the radio, and I don't want to have a shake. If your voice is shaky, can you make it okay to do that? Perfectly fine. And go ahead and push 1 anyway. Or maybe the thought is, well, my question isn't important. Well, my offering is that every person's question is important, and oftentimes the seemingly simplest questions can be some of the most profound and powerful, especially for people who've been doing the work over an extended period of time. And so if you have a thought or a question for us, now's the time to push one. Let's have a conversation about it. How can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. Push one. We'll be having a conversation. Breathing with you. I was talking to someone the other day about hate. They were engaged in pointing hatred at someone. And as we started to look at the dynamic behind hatred, which is, you know, thoughts, destructive thoughts, and thoughts of blame toward another. What, in interaction, as this person started to look at that, what they discovered was a self-hatred that they weren't even aware was there. And that their hatred of this other, what appeared to be their hatred of this other person, was really self-hatred. And the denial of that self-hatred had led to projecting it onto someone else. And so if one looks at just about any disintegrative emotion that you could send to someone else, it's oftentimes simply a reflection of an internal condition. And if you're not able to hold to a space of conscious, active, present love, if you're not able to hold to your human life, and of course you've heard me ask the question before about hold a newborn child and tap into the essence of that newborn, everybody's answer, the descriptor of the essence of the newborn is always answered with a word that's some variation on the theme of love, because the truth is every one of us knows the truth about what human life is, and it is conscious, active, present love. So when I realize that, and I realize that there's a to go beyond the mind and reach a new level of understanding, there's a 13th century Sufi mystic, so this was written over 700 years ago, man named Rumi, and he says this: the soul has been given its own ears to hear things the mind cannot understand. If you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he says the eye is the lamp of the soul. You know, when he's talking about the eye, he's not talking about your physical eye. He's talking about perception. The constructs of the mind are designed to be a guide. And that guide has a wisdom, when we are truly open to it, that goes far beyond what we could ever hear with our seemingly, what seems to be our physical ears. And so what Rumi's pointing out is that in our true beingness, there's a whole other set of ears and eyes to hear and see things that aren't rational to the mind, but are true and therefore available. Yeshua 2,000 years ago warned about, you know, allowing darkness to become the guide for your life. In that passage where he talks about the eye is the lamp of the soul, if the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? And you say, well, what the heck does that mean? Well, when you realize that the light is the guide that would guide you in your life, then if your perception, your guide, the perceptual construct of your mind, which we've referred to as the I, if that's meant to guide you and hostility or fear enters into it, then notice that you're being guided by darkness. Yeshua says, you know, if the light for you is darkness, and of course, you have to understand what's meant by that. If the light, if the guide that you follow is darkness, that is any form of hostility or fear, then how deep will your darkness become? You know, a question that we've asked of, you know, along with that question about holding a newborn of tens of thousands of people all over the globe over the years that we've asked is, has anybody ever done anything you regret? And of course, people laugh and sheepishly put their hands up. I say, okay, so go back to a moment where you did something that you now regret having done. And you know what the answer is 100% of the time? Nobody ever says love. Nobody ever says, you know, the descriptive they have for the North. Oh, I was in this wonderful, sweet, loving place when I did what I regretted. Everybody says, oh, I was in rage. I was in fear. I was in hatred. I was in vengeance. Darkness. Literally what happens is that when perception is clouded by hostility or fear, it turns to darkness. And then we become cooperators. In fact, we end up becoming victims of our own mental processes because we do behaviors based in darkness, sure that we must be right, and then wonder why it didn't turn out. And, of course, what's most everybody do at that moment? Blames them. If only they'd be different. Excuse me. If only you'd be different. That's all that needs to change in your life. You know, there is only one problem in your world, and you're it. It's kind of the bad news. The good news is there's one solution. And if you turn toward the actual light, toward the presence of love, then those ears that your being, that your soul has, will start to understand on a level beyond anything I could ever put into words. So we're here to inspire you to move in that direction. Access that level of guidance because it is within you. And one of the ways to cut yourself off from that, as we talked about earlier in the show, is by holding the breath. Literally, the holding of the breath shuts off access to love. And it leaves us stuck in the revolving door of what carbon-based memory has to share with us. And what is this carbon-based memory that we're talking about? CBM. Well, if you talk to a modern-day physiologist, physicist, and you ask them what the base element of your so-called body is, they'll tell you that it's carbon. And if you inquire as to the structure of a carbon atom, the natural carbon atom has 6 electrons, 6 protons, and 6 neutrons. Its number is 666. You might remember that number from some ancient times. Where is this thing that was called the Antichrist located? It's in your own mind. And if you substitute what's stored in carbon-based memory, in your physiological structure, for the truth of what's happening at this moment, if you put that in place of the wisdom that you could be hearing on that soul level, then how deep has your darkness become? And notice that when people get tired of dealing with it and say, enough's enough, what does the mind do? It blames them. It's all your fault. Like, I'm the innocent victim here. And the truth is, when we live in denial, we become victims of our own minds. our own mental gymnastics, our own mental dynamics, and the way we can successfully hide parts of ourselves. It's just amazing. And the way that the mind can lie to us is just beyond comprehension. All the tricky ways that the mind can lie to us. And if you're going to truly heal, and each one of the tools is designed to collapse perception, if you're going to truly heal, then you've got to be out of your mind, functioning out of the same generational patterns of hostility, fear, blame, and guilt, pointing the finger at everybody else, and ever come back to a truly connected, rational life. So we're here to bring that understanding forward and to inspire people in the use of the tools to literally remove, remembering that forgiveness is about removal. Forgiveness has nothing to do with, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. Forgiveness is a tool with which I go inside myself and I literally remove the very capacity for any form of hostility or fear. As I do that, absolutely everything changes. A shift beyond imagination. So how can we support you in bringing those tools into expression in your world? We've got about 5 minutes left, so there's time for a significant conversation in just 5 minutes. So if you're listening and any of what I've said is resonating with something for you, put up your hand, let's have a conversation. Well, I don't recall the switchboard being this quiet in a while, so I wonder what everybody's up to today. Let's just look into the principles of forgiveness and recognize that we've been sold a lie. We've been sold a bill of goods about forgiveness. We've been told that I need to forgive you for what's happening inside of me. And if that's what you're talking about, forgiveness, then please never forgive anyone ever again. Because forgiveness has nothing to do with me letting you off the hook because pain or trauma is moving in me. Forgiveness is the tool with which I collapse the perceptual output of my mind that lies to me, and I drop into the level of energy where the offense and the pain are actually being created. I recapture those parts of my mind. I bring them forward in the presence of love, and lo and behold, the hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the grief, the terror, the trauma, the drama begin to dissolve. And if you haven't engaged in the forgiveness process as yet, please go to our website, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, you'll see a link that says Start Here. Click that link. And it'll walk you through a whole series of links that will tell you everything that will be useful for you to know about forgiveness. There is a worksheet process there. You can fill the worksheet in live on the website and then print it for your own use. There are radio shows where either Dr. Tim or Jeannie or myself have walked someone totally through the worksheet process. So all of the instructions are there many times over. And of course, I think there are 20 some shows now where one of us took somebody through a worksheet. And each one of them is different. Each one of them is instructive in a different way. And so go to that section with those worksheet shows and start listening to them and the building of the brain cells that will happen with that is just deeply, deeply profound. You can print the worksheets off from the website, or, as I say, you can do it right there live, or you can go to your phone store, your app store on your phone, and download the world's only forgiveness app created by Jeannie. And in that forgiveness app, all you have to do is type in the words Heartland, Heartland being one word, H-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, and you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app created by Jeannie, and it is awesome. You can do the process right there on your phone. So please take the tools, use them, pass them along, and in the meantime, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. The world needs it. You deserve it. Thanks for joining us. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.